from KQED.
John Oliver arrived in the United States for the first time in 2006 when he signed on to The Daily Show with Jon Stewart as the program's resident senior British correspondent. From politics to food to grammar, Oliver often specializes in skewering all things American. Here's an excerpt from a piece he did last year on the Tea Party, where he quizzed rally participants about the true meaning of tyranny from a distinctly British point of view.
Who do you think was worse, this government or the British government of 1773?
This government.
I think it's a toss-up.
Whoa, Jane. Hold on. I mean, that's quite insulting to a British person. I mean, we were tyrannical beyond this government's wildest dreams. Do you even remember what we did to you people?
I know what you did to us. You closed the ports. You tortured our prisoners of war.
Yeah, we did do that. Guilty as charged. We worked so hard to be tyrannical like that. You're going to give it to Obama for a 3% tax hike? The British did worse things than you people could ever even dream up. Thumbscrews, for a start. I don't see a single thumbscrew. They don't have the b**ch to use them.
Of course they do. What do you think
what
the IRS
is for? What are you talking about?
IRS is the country's thumbscrew.
Oh, please. That's a metaphorical thumbscrew. We actually put thumbs and screwed them.
It's taxation without representation.
But does it feel like taxation without representation?
It really does.
I mean, even though it isn't.
Well, it is in the sense that they're not representing my views.
Okay, but it isn't in the sense that you do have representation, of course.
John Oliver reporting, quote unquote, for The Daily Show. Oliver also hosts a comedy series of his own on the Comedy Channel and has a DVD out called Terrifying Times and does stand-up comedy, which is why he is in San Francisco this weekend, performing at Cobb's Comedy Club in North Beach tonight and tomorrow night, though we should note that all of the shows are sold out, save tomorrow night at 10:15. And John Oliver joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for putting reporting in verbal italics there.
Thank you for being here on this on this New Year's Eve. Just listening to that story again, it reminds me of something you've observed often about just the value of having a British accent.
Yeah. Well, there is a natural authority to it, albeit an antagonizing authority at times. And with that piece in particular, that was really our only idea going in was just how ridiculous it was to devalue the term tyranny that had been built up so hard over the years by countries such as mine, who really tried to put the power in it over the centuries. And it was absolutely amazing to talk to those people and have them claim that this was the most tyrannical government in history, that we're living under the yoke of now.
When you're doing, as you often do, those sorts of man on the street or person on the street sorts of interviews, how often, like in those instances, I mean, did people get who you were and what that was about? Or was that a real straight response to, absolutely, this is taxation?
We have to say who we have to say who we are. It's actually horrible listening back to it, just especially there's something about not having the visuals of it as well. It just makes listening to yourself behave so badly. I feel like my mom's over my shoulder saying, oh, just be nice. But it's, we have to tell people who we are and where we're from. But the idea is really that they just say what they truly feel. And so we encourage them not to joke around and just state their point of view. And it's amazing how often people want to do that. Also, it's even more amazing how often people want to be on TV. That is their Achilles heel, is that they are attracted to cameras like flies to electric heaters.
And for you, does it continue to be a sort of source of delight and wonderment after 4 years of being in this country, the way Americans behave, particularly politically?
Yeah, it's been fascinating in almost every aspect. Partly the access that we've got has increased over the time that I've been here. And the different problem-solving techniques that we have with each piece, it always makes it interesting. But it has been an incredible time in American history to be here, the last 4 years.
Think you said once that you fell in this love with this country when you came in 2006 at sort of its worst possible moment.
It was, pretty much. You think 2006 was pretty bad. There was a real sense of hopelessness around. And to witness, a burgeoning optimism then relatively dashed with the crushing realities of life on Earth, it's been such an interesting time politically to be working for a show like this, and we are very fortunate to have the kind of access that we do to the news stories as they happen.
How do you start each day by sort of evaluating those things? For example, I heard on the news, on NPR News this morning, that one of the first things the new Republican majority will do in Congress is to read the Constitution aloud in its entirety, all 4,000 and some whatever words it is. So is that the kind of thing that you take and go, hmm?
Yeah. I don't know if would be the particular sound we'd make first thing in the morning. I think really what you want to do, the first visceral sound is more like being punched in the stomach at our writers' meeting at 9 in the morning. And so then you spend the day trying to come to terms with that and try and generate it into laughter. So taking that initial, oh God, and trying to make fun and laughter out of it. And hopefully the process will be cathartic for us and the people watching it.
Because you're a writer on
the show,
which
yeah.
is not true for the rest of the correspondents.
Sanak is as well. Wyatt Cernak and I are both writers. But that's kind of the most fun of it.
In what way?
Well, because it's the daily task of creating the show is the most exciting thing. The kind of factory-like atmosphere of starting with nothing and trying to end with something, whatever that thing is. So, you know, the performing is really fun, and it's something that's great to do. But the writing side of it is what I feel where your learning curve is really steep.
And is it something that builds on itself? I mean, I tend to think of writing as a solo activity, but in this instance, it's obviously very collaborative.
It's intensely collaborative. To the extent that our show is collaborative well outside just those that are labelled as writers as well, be it the other correspondents with field pieces or especially studio production, the people that source, that find the clips. Because at our writers' meeting in the morning, they come up with the clips that they've pulled out and they are pitching those almost as jokes. And that is unquestionably a kind of writing in and of itself. Those montages that you see put together, they are cut like jokes, with the rhythm of a joke, starting with the setup clips, ending with a punchline clip. So, it is the most collaborative, imaginable process that you can conceive.
John Oliver, our guest this hour, he is the senior British correspondent for The Daily Show, as opposed to anything other than... See, everyone's a senior, though, aren't they? Isn't every correspondent a senior correspondent?
Yeah, that's right. That's kind of one of the nonsense jokes.
And he will be performing this evening and tomorrow night in San Francisco at Cobb's Comedy Club in North Beach. You can check the website to see about ticket availabilities as of earlier this morning, anyway. The only availabilities were for tomorrow night at the 10:15 program. I want to play another clip. If I might. This is from an exchange that you and John Stewart had over the World Cup, which you had a lot of fun with over the course of 2010. Because I also want to ask about how those segments are constructed, which are seemingly more interview-like and less written, but obviously also planned out. So here's an exchange you had right after America had beaten, I can't remember who, Britain had England had won a game as well. And here's the exchange, a brief part of the exchange you two had about progress at the World Cup.
Okay. John Oliver, nice to see you. Congratulations to you as well. John, I wanted to say congratulations to you as well. England defeated Slovenia 1-0. A well-played match.
Thank you. On your end,
congratulations.
Hey, thanks very much, John. And you know what? Congratulations to you, too.
Very kind.
What a breakthrough for America. All right, you finally made it.
Well,
no, come on, welcome.
The round of 16, we've actually been there prior, but excellent.
No, I meant welcome to the third world.
The third world,
John. Today, America officially became a third world country.
Because we won a soccer game?
Just crunch the numbers, Stuart. Rampant unemployment, your dollar is basically valueless, you owe billions to other countries, you can't win a war for and what's more, you dominated a game of football and you deserve to win it.
John Oliver and John Stewart talking about the World Cup. How did those develop?
How do those pieces with John develop? It's hard because, you know, we kind of... You kind of forget these after the fact because the show moves so fast that you kind of hearing it again, it's a kind of a hazy memory. But I think with that there was, I think it's probably clear that the overall idea that we'd had in the morning was that America now has all the qualifications for a third world country, being as now it is a fan and successful in what you term soccer, and the rest of the world chooses to phrase differently. And so then we just, we write a draft, get some notes from John, write another draft, get some notes from John, and rehearse it, and then there is an extent to which, with John and I, that we sometimes rough it up while we're doing it as well.
You know, so there is always an element of improvisation to those?
Not always. With those particular ones, I mean, with some of the ones regarding the World Cup, well, they were almost entirely made up on the spot. It was just us winding each other up because there wasn't much more. I mean, at least there was a joke there. There was a point of view. However sophisticated you argue it would be, that the third world point, that is a point that we wanted to make. With the other ones, it was often just antagonism on both sides. So that we would just go out, annoy each other for 2.5 minutes and then leave.
And you've also noted that John Stewart is actually a better soccer player or football player than he'd like to.
He's
us to
pretty
know.
Good. I've got to say, I was not expecting. We played outside the Daily Show, and where he played in college for William & Mary, and the years have caught up with him. But there was the shadow of a decent footballer somewhere in his creaky movements.
The other thing you've said about him that I was intrigued by is that you said he's a really good manager. I mean, he's not just a
it's
brilliant.
Spectacular. I mean, yeah. He's obviously a sublime comedian. I think that probably goes without saying that he is a comedian who is beyond outstanding. But you can't just be inspired comedically in the job that he has to turn out 4 shows a day and to manage a large group of people like that, and to do that for over a decade and make it interesting for yourself and for everyone else. It is absolutely mind-blowing what he is able to do. And that is, I knew he was going to be brilliant as a comedian when I took the job, but I don't think I was aware of just how hands-on he was going to be over the entire process.
He has also, as you know, recently gotten a lot of accolades for the role he played in encouraging, shall we say, the Congress to pass the bill that gives benefits to the 9/11 first responders. New York Times went so far as to reference a comparison to Edward R. Murrow. When you read
that's
that kind
insane.
Of thing,
yeah, that's insane.
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. That is hyperbole beyond what is possibly acceptable. I think I can only imagine that was even written with a smirk. If it wasn't, then that is just terrifying coming from someone at the New York Times. You might argue he's the Edward R. Murrow of comedy. That is equally meaningless. But he's nothing to do with journalism. He would be the first to say that. That's a ludicrous thing to say about him.
And yet, I mean, there is this curious role that your show plays now in affecting the outcome of public events, whether that is, if you listen to the people like the 9/11 first responders, the role that the show played in helping to get that done, the role he's played at other times and sort of discouraging shout matches on CNN whatever. I mean, there is a consequence.
But
it's comedy with a consequence.
But that's really not a role of our making.
Yeah.
Now, we are a comedy show. So all we try to do is make people laugh and then have a point somewhere in it. But primarily we're a comedy show. If we don't make people laugh, we've done a bad show. That's the kind of beginning and the end of it.
Even on something like that topic, on 9/11?
On that topic, yeah. Like the first section was a comedy section. The second section, when we interviewed them, it's very hard to be glib or ironic with 4 men who are dying. So, you know, we actually went through at the start of that day some ideas for is there a way of pitching some jokes or to do this like we normally would with some irony. You can't do that when you have 4 dying heroes in front of you. So that became a complete outlier section for our show, which was just having the discussion, trying to find some comedic juxtapositions, largely the one being the Republicans standing weeping for their lost friends who were retiring in the House. That was the main joke. That was the first joke that we arrived at thinking, this is insane. And then in researching just how little the story had been covered on the news by everyone apart from Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was the only thing that did a 12-minute section on how terrible it was that the 9/11 first responders were not being taken care of. So those are comedic juxtapositions.
Probably Al Jazeera, is that?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Excuse me. What an awful slip of the tongue. Yes, Al Jazeera.
John Oliver, our guest. He'll be performing at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco both tonight and tomorrow. I want to ask you something about stand-up, and as we go into that, I also want to open up our phone lines. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to make to John Oliver, here's the number if you want to join us. It's 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum at kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add in your comment there. You're spectacularly successful in what you're doing on The Daily Show, yet you're flying across the country to do stand-up comedy. What's the draw to still do that?
I love it. I find it – I get miserable when I don't do it. That's the – it's no, that is not a healthy mental state to be in. But Jon Stewart still does it himself. Yeah. He equally doesn't – even more so, neither really has the time and doesn't need to do it. And yet it's kind of stand-up – when you come from the world of stand-up, it's an itch you really have to scratch.
And yet it's in many ways almost – it would seem like the opposite – from a performer standpoint of what you were just describing with The Daily Show, and that it's not collaborative at all.
No, and that in many sometimes is the charm, especially when you're working so collaboratively during your week. Sometimes it's then nice to have ideas that you've had that haven't perhaps fitted into something that you can then adapt into something else, and that you can do. You can do anything you like in stand up. The only variable is whether an audience will let you do that. But no, I absolutely love stand-up.
Yeah. Riskier as well?
Well, it's riskier in the... I don't know how risky either of them are. You know, it's all relative, isn't it? There is an immediacy to stand-up, so that you are accountable in a more visceral sense to what you say, in that people can laugh or they can stop you from saying stuff.
Your show Terrifying Times netted not exactly a glowing review in the New York Times last year, and said he's wonderful in The Daily Show, but watching him in stand-up is not nearly so much fun. Paraphrasing here. What is that? I mean, when you read that, does that make you less inclined or more inclined to keep at that sort of art?
It's strange. I haven't actually talked about that. It was actually a few years ago. That was the first hour I did here. And I actually agreed with some of it. It was it was my first experience of doing a stand-up on television of that length. And I think it was overwritten. And by the time I got around to doing it, it was the kind of joy had been sucked out of it. For myself, and I learned a lot of lessons from it, but I wouldn't really disagree with much of
what did you learn?
I think the point of stand-up is that you have to be enjoying it, otherwise it just becomes a monologue, and that's not really stand-up at its best. So I tried to keep stand-up much looser after the fact. There, I did a stand-up series last year, and I'm shooting another series in January, those are much looser segments.
Give us a sense, if you can, of some of what you'll be doing in your show at Cops Comedy Club here in San Francisco.
It'll be something to it'll be broadly political, and it'll touch on subjects from this year. But the beauty with stand-up is that it's fluid.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't need to be a firm lecture, which is like the one that you're referring to, The Terrifying Times. I think that went far too far down the line of becoming a lecture. I don't mind it, but I struggle to watch it.
So it wouldn't be unusual at some point over the course of the day, if something happens or pops into your head, that you would reincorporate that into the show and alter
absolutely.
It in a particular
absolutely.
Way?
That happened just yesterday.
Doing so. What?
Yesterday it was I met up with a friend of mine, and a friend of mine who was African-American. And so this is what I was talking about last night. I think I'll try it again tonight. And I went to shake his hand, and I kept my hand down, and he wanted to move it up into that more, you know, modern handshake. And I don't like doing that because I can't carry it off. And so it became this impromptu arm wrestle on the street with me trying to keep our hands down and him trying to turn it up. And it just felt like a kind of physical embodiment of the 1950s. Just, I don't want change yet. Please stay here. No, the world's moving forward. It's going too quickly. Let me do it at my own pace. So I kind of talked that out as an idea last night, and I think I'll try again tonight.
And let's hear what a couple of our listeners are wanting to comment on. Pranav in San Mateo has our first call. Pranav, go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning to you both. John, you know, I was wondering, I know there are differences between the British and American comedy, though I don't really know what those differences are. I was wondering, you know, hoping you could sort of shed light on how the stuff you do in the U.S. has influenced our British comedy and how it relates, doesn't relate to British comedy.
Well, I don't know if there is that big a difference, to be honest. There's so much cross-fertilization between the two now I was influenced by lots of British comedians just because that's where I grew up, but I was also, you know, my favorite stand-up was Richard Pryor, So I actually don't think it's as different as people seem to think it is. So that would be my broader take on that.
Pranav, thanks for the call. You have observed, though, that it's easier to make a living as a stand-up comedian in England than
much,
it is here.
Much, much, much easier. Stand-up can be its own reward in England. And that is why, in general, it's possible to take more risks in stand-up in England, because it can be its own reward. You don't need to be on a television show as well. Geographically, that it's much easier. No, there's almost nowhere in England you can't drive back home from. So you don't need to take a five-hour flight. If you take a five-hour flight from England, you're not likely to be in Europe anymore in the same continent.
Besides geography, why do you think that is? I mean, that there's more of a response to that. Where does that come from?
I don't know. But, I mean, there are 80 clubs, albeit some small, like above rooms above a pub, 80 stand-up comedy clubs in London alone. So there is a real appetite for stand-up, which does mean that just economically it can be your only job quite easily. Now, you're not going to become particularly rich off it, but you can definitely subsist just from doing stand-up, which is unbelievably difficult to do here.
Back to our calls. Let's go to Doug next in Oakland. Doug, go ahead.
Hi. I know you often distance yourself from being real journalists on The Daily Show.
Yes.
And fair enough. But I think to say you're just in it for the entertainment is kind of missing the... What you do is social commentary, and it's a good deal more serious than pure entertainment. Wouldn't you agree?
No, I would not entirely agree. No, I mean, it's our primary objective is always comedy. You know, we're on Comedy Central. Now, John runs the show, and he likes each segment to have a point of view. So you're right to an extent that we are not completely glib all the time, and there are often points that we make underneath the jokes, but we have to have jokes. So we are a comedy show. It's just we do comedy about things that we're interested in.
Doug, thanks for the call. Where will you go with this from here? Do you want to stay with it? Some often shows like The Daily Show or Saturday Night Live are launching pads to people moving on then into other forms of performance and entertainment. Is that true for you?
I understand that has been the case. The odd thing is that it was my favourite show before I came here. So if I was doing something else, I would only be trying to get on this show. So I don't want to use it as a launching pad. I want to stay. So I'll stay as long as John wants to continue to do it. Because
in any sense of that, how long
I've no idea.
Yeah.
I've no idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're speaking as the worried side of my conscience now. I hope indefinitely. It's the happiest job I've ever had, so I definitely don't want to leave.
What else are you going to be engaged in the coming year? You've played a continuing role on another sitcom. You're doing another series for Comedy Channel. How do you manage all of those things? What's in front of you for the coming year?
It's a juggling thing. You know, we wrote a book on the show last year, so that became another way that we had to structure our time. The stand-up show I'll be doing over one weekend, just two shows a day for six over the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I can do that in New York. That actually won't take too much time. The sitcom I do in hiatus weeks from The Daily Show, so that's the kind of the main focus is always The Daily Show, and then the other things are a nice way to clear your head. Like you were saying with stand-up, that it's a different because it's not collaborative. It's relaxing in a way. Now, using other jobs to relax is, again, not particularly emotionally or physically healthy. But at the moment, it's working. It clears my head to do other stuff.
John Oliver, a guest again. He'll be at Cobb's Comedy Club tonight in San Francisco, tomorrow night as well. Tickets still available, we think, for the 10:15 show tomorrow evening. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to post to John Oliver, we've got a couple of minutes where you can still do that. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. I want to come back to politics for a moment. You were at, yes, the Rally to Restore Sanity and all that event. Yeah, tell us about what that was like.
Well, it was the single weirdest day of my life. I came on at the end as Peter Pan, and there was one moment at the end where I was dragging Stephen Colbert off stage, dressed as Peter Pan, and I turned around having got him off stage and nearly tripped over R2-D2 and physically fell into Tony Bennett. So that should tell you just how strange that day got.
That's a pretty interesting combination.
Pretty weird.
Pretty weird.
Yeah. That was an all-timer. It was a very – it all happened fast. It was coming off the back of a week of shows that we'd done in DC, and we were having also to prepare for the live show for the midterm elections we were doing back in New York on Tuesday. So it's honestly, it was a bit of a blur. All I know is that we were working frantically through to the last minute to get stuff ready. John was working hard beyond, again, even what I can comprehend as a work schedule. And then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, you're looking out over a couple of 100,000 people on a sunny day thinking, how did I get here?
As Peter Pan.
Yeah, that's right. In green tights.
Let's hear from David next in San Francisco. David, go ahead with John Oliver.
Yeah, hi. I want to ask John, from abroad, from the UK, what does it seem like America's trend line is? Are we becoming less of a great nation?
Oh, no.
We're a third world country, according to John.
This feels like a Dr. Ruth. Now I've got some. I hope you're sitting down. Well, you know, I'm not an economic expert, but things are looking a little dicey for America. So I think you may find that you are on the other side of the peak of empire, and it'll just be how quickly you choose to ski down the other side.
Speaking from an experience point of view on what happens with empires, Stephanie in San Leandro, quick comment for John Oliver.
Hi. My question for John is about The Daily Show. When you're doing the field pieces,
yes,
it seems like you're really bold and animated, and sometimes the people you're speaking to look kind of upset. Yeah. So I was wondering if anyone's ever tried to slug you.
No.
Thanks, Stephanie.
I'm not sure what's underneath that question, with the inclination that they should have been. It definitely gets tense. I've not yet been physically assaulted.
Though you did break your nose.
I did break my nose. I physically assaulted myself there. I fell over during a piece. But no, I've not. But it does get tense. And they are excruciating moments, some of those interviews.
Do you ever feel, you've mentioned before, you have, you know, your mom is hovering above you sometimes, where you feel like, oh, I just, this is so funny, but I feel kind of bad.
My mom can't watch it for that. She doesn't like to see me behave that badly. But actually, Stephen Colbert was very helpful when I first joined the show, because it is, some of those are rough to do, those interviews. And he was very useful in saying you must always think about the edit, because that's where you are going to make this piece. Mm. So you don't want to not say something just because it feels too tense in the room, and then get into the edit and wish you'd said it, because it would have made a better story.
We're out of time, but one last quick question. What are you most looking forward to about the new Republican Congress?
On a comedic sense, a personal sense, a moral sense.
Any way you want to.
Honestly, I did not realize until getting here this morning, because I've stayed away over a hiatus, that they were going to do that thing with the Constitution. And I'm looking forward to that.
John Oliver, our guest this hour.
God bless America, and God bless the party of America, the grand old party.
And if you want to hear more, he'll be at the Cobbs Comedy Club tonight and tomorrow in San Francisco. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Danzal is our senior editor. Danny Bringer, our engineer. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. Happy New Year. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.